Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. It's 8:11. It is Monday morning, the 12th day of February, 2024. Good morning, everyone. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM, over the air, of course, here in San Juan County, New Mexico. In Durango, Colorado, we broadcast all the time at 103.3 FM. And if you're anywhere else on the planet and want to listen to what we're doing, just go to our website anytime. KSJE.com. We also want to welcome our viewers this morning because, of course, you know this is a visual radio station supported by the community. So the video of this program is streaming out live to the KSJE Facebook page and also to our YouTube channel. So welcome aboard, everyone. We are glad that you are with us because coming up in the next few moments, I have the one and the only Farmington Police Chief, Steve Hebby, is going to sit down and have a conversation with me. Lots of things that are going on, including his trips to Santa Fe, the state legislature, and much, much more. That conversation starts in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then later on this hour, we'll talk about technology. It's our Monday reboot segment at 8:50 a.m. right here as well on KSJE. Next hour, Mick Hess is going to take over the radio airwaves, Roving with the Arts, our weekday classical music program. That starts at 9:06. We also want to remind you to connect with us on our Instagram page and our X accounts, formerly known as Twitter, at KSJE_news or at KSJE. And if you're a podcast person, you can connect with us there as well. KSJE publishes podcasts of some of our local programs. You can subscribe for free and maybe discover a new local program that you may have missed recently. Places like iTunes and Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Pandora, even The Cop Shop is on a podcast on those places. So check it out and subscribe and listen to a program that you may have missed recently. Outside our studios here at San Juan College, it's a mostly sunny Monday morning, 23 degrees at the moment, and we're expecting a mostly sunny week, as a matter of fact. 39 for a high today in Farmington, 23 overnight tonight, warmer tomorrow with a high of 47, warmer still on Wednesday with a high of 49 and 53 by the end of the week with overnight lows right around 30 degrees. Back with my guest, Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby, right after this. And back at Studio A this morning with my guest, as I mentioned, Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby is here. Chief, good morning. It's nice to see you.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I am well. I only see you usually on Fridays for your show.
Yeah, yes.
And how the tables have turned. Yeah. Because here you are.
I feel like I'm on your turf now.
Right. Well, you're always on my turf. But anyways, but it's nice to have you here. Of course, you and Shanice host the Cop Shop on the second and fourth Fridays at noon here on KSJE. It's something you've done for a number of years, and we really appreciate it. The support, and hopefully it's a program that allows you, the department, to get the word out on kind of the things that you guys are doing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been a great collaboration for us. It's just a different way of trying to communicate with folks. You know, you've got the newspaper, and that's been greater or lesser. I think it's rolling a little bit right now. But we've gone through ups and downs with the newspaper. And other than that, it's hard to get the message out and just talk about issues. And so the Cop Shop's really given us a chance to dive a little deeper on some topics.
Right. Well, wonderful. That's a good partnership, as you mentioned. And yeah. So also I wanted to talk about the obvious, which is your injury, and ask you how you're doing. It looks like you're getting around just fine, but you've got a little cast or something on your arm. Let me have it. Yeah, show it off there. Yeah, look at that. It's even in your blues, your official blues,
yeah,
I suppose, right?
I made sure to get it in the blues. All so right. I for those of you that don't follow me on Facebook.
Oh, there was a story in the paper about it, too.
Oh, that's true.
Oh,
that's
right. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was reffing over an Aztec, Gallup versus Aztec game, and tried to twirl myself out of getting hit by a ball when I was right on the sideline, and as I twirled, the ball hit me. I fell over backwards and braced myself with my hand, which was a mistake, and I knew it seconds later. And you know, it subsequently was fractured. It's right here,
right.
Bone right there. When you go like that, it's cracked. After I leave here, I'm going to have it X-rayed, make sure that it's healing properly. If it isn't, there's a possibility of surgery, but I'm hopeful that it'll go okay.
Oh, okay.
I was back on the court Friday and Saturday.
Well, okay.
Reffing, so.
That's good. Well, and all because of a twirl, and I can't imagine all that ballet training you've had gone to waste.
Yeah. Getting older is not the dream for some stuff.
Well, hopefully you're on the mend, and
yes.
And hopefully you won't need surgery, but I just wanted to get an update from you.
Yes,
and wish you well on the way to recovery. You spent some time in Santa Fe last week. I wanted to ask you a bit about that. I know there's some legislation that you are watching as it relates to law enforcement. What types of things are you watching?
Yeah, there's several different bills that are making their way through. The ones grabbing the most notoriety, of course, are the gun bills. And there's maybe seven of them. I don't even know them all. There's one that looks like it is likely to pass. I think it did pass out of the House already, if I'm not mistaken. And that's a waiting period. Started as a 14-day period, and now it's 7 days prior to the purchase of a gun. That did pass out of the House, I believe, and looks like it may pass out of the Senate as well. There's some other bills. One's an assault weapons ban. I'm not really sure how that's doing. It certainly has some support in some quarters, but that'll be a more controversial one to get across the finish line. There's a red flag amendment that would give the police the ability to be the petitioner in a red flag case. Right now, currently, it has to be basically some either a spouse or some significant other in that person's life that agrees to sign something saying, yeah, I want you to take the guns. And that's been problematic for law enforcement. Additionally, it gives the person who has to surrender the guns 48 hours to surrender those guns voluntarily. And of course, if we're saying the person's in crisis, 48 hours is a long time. So I'm not really sure what they're going to do with that. I think there was some support to try and change it. But I feel like we're kind of halfway across the stream on that one. Either you're going to do it and you're going to give the police the ability to enforce this, or really it's going to continue to be at best lukewarm effective, in which case it's almost worse than having nothing. So, you know, that one we're watching. I don't know how that one will go. There's other bills related to finance, and that's what this session is. It's a finance session. There's one on retire and rehire. Which actually looks fairly serious this year, and that, Scott, as you know, over the last decade, it's come up several times, but never really had the support. There is support now from some of the unions for retire rehire to help corrections, help law enforcement with frontline people, so you could retire and rehire as an officer.
The issue around that, pardon me for interrupting,
yes.
But the issue around that was kind of the concept of potentially double dipping, I guess, right? If someone
yes.
was on retirement, getting their
yes.
retiree pension, but then going back into law enforcement and then getting a salary on top of that
yes.
pension.
And honestly, I get the public's, you know, when you just look at it from that perspective, you know, and you don't dive any deeper, I get it. But like many, many, many topics in America, it's always deeper than that. So I'm double dipping currently, right? I retired from Anchorage and I came down here to be a police chief. So I'm continuing my career, just not where they originally paid and trained me. And that's what we're seeing in New Mexico as well. So at a time where we critically need officers and corrections officers to stay in the field here in New Mexico, we've stopped the double dip, which doesn't mean it stops. It just means they cross the border, they go to Colorado, they go to Arizona, they go to Texas, continue their career, and we've spent 20 to 25 years training them, and we lose all that experience. So, you know, rarely are catchy slogans like double dip fully accurate and give you the full picture. I am strongly in support of it. We are struggling to recruit across the state. I'm president of the Police Chiefs Association, as you know, Scott, and I can tell you it is across the state that departments are struggling, especially smaller departments, in the South. They are struggling to get police officers. So why we would not avail ourselves of this opportunity, I don't know. But I'm hopeful that it will pass.
Gotcha. And you're right. There is a shortage, as we talked about, and you've talked about on your program as well, of finding officers. And I think, you know, the road to retirement or to be able to submit for that pension is relatively, I don't want to say a short one, but it's shorter than maybe other public service type of jobs. And so you're able to still have maybe a second career, third career for yes. many people in law enforcement because they can get those benefits maybe sooner than other folks because of the nature of the job, which,
yes,
let's face it, is dangerous.
Yes. So, you know, if you start as a police officer at age 21 and it's a 25-year retirement now, it was a 20-year, now it's a 25-year, I mean, you're 46. So you still have many years of useful service in policing. Plus, you've got all that experience and training where when they retire out, I'm starting over from ground zero trying to take another 21-year-old kid and train them all the stuff that the person who just left already knew and already was experienced in. So, you know, I get the perception of it, but when it can happen anyway, and we're just seeing an exodus of folks leaving the state to go keep their career going in their mid-40s, why would we not change that?
Right. And I think there's been some other tweaks as well about maybe these folks that are coming back in after retirement are still paying into the system, but
yes.
not taking any more out. So that's
Correct.
Helping to keep the system a bit more financially viable for others. And so there's a lot more to it than just getting rehired.
Yeah, no, absolutely is.
As you mentioned. Speaking of which, I know you want to talk about the officer in Las Cruces. Our thoughts are with that department and the officer's family. There's another fatality over the weekend, I think it was, and this was a fatal stabbing
yes.
of an officer responding to a crime report, right?
Yeah, so I don't know if you can pull up our Facebook page, if you can do that quickly, but on our Facebook page, you can see the story. We shared it from Las Cruces PD. I did on my Facebook page, you know, Steve Hebby. You can see it. It's open. And Las Cruces put out that they are, that their officer responded to what looks like a trespassing call and that the officer was stabbed. It also appears, just kind of reading between the lines, it appears a citizen intervened after that and shot the suspect. And the suspect, I think, passed, if that's my recollection of the story.
Yes.
The officer was transported. He died. Unfortunately, stabbings are a little bit unusual, but are a great threat. You know, there's no, the officers don't wear body armor that stops you from being stabbed. In this case, he's a 29-year-old father of two, and was deceased. So, you know, just a grim day. Happened yesterday, I think around 5 p.m., if I'm recalling the story correct. And, you know, what we were probably all doing at that time was watching the Super Bowl. And here's a young officer, a father, just out doing his job. Not a high-risk call. Our officers here in Farmington go on trespassing calls and unwanted subjects, you know, constantly throughout the day. That is actually our bread-and-butter call. And in this case, the officer was attacked and killed. So just a terrible day.
This is Officer Jonah Hernandez, who lives in El Paso but worked for the Las Cruces Police Department.
Yes.
And as I recall the story, too, I think it was a passerby or a witness that used his radio to call for help.
Yes.
After he was stabbed.
Yes.
At that call. And unfortunately, this is just one of many stories that we've talked about and heard reported over the last, gosh, I don't know, but it's just too many.
It is too many. And it's... You know, these times kind of pass by us, and so I'm not really sure, you know, sitting here right now, I haven't formulated exactly what I want to say, but in general, you know, we have these events happen to young police officers, and when the police do something wrong or the police get into some sort of controversy, there's all sorts of opinions that just come flooding out, and it's always... More training for the officers, more transparency from the department, more accountability. And then you get in moments like this and people feel bad and it's that's a shame. And within 2 days, it's gone and we're back to, we need more training, we need more transparency, we need more accountability. And, you know, gone is that moment where we had a 29-year-old officer who was out during Super Bowl Sunday when the rest of us were sitting at home, and he should not have been killed. And there should be just as much intolerance of police being attacked and killed as there is police screwing things up or getting involved in controversies. But there really is not. And it always is interesting to me to read who's making the comments when things go bad, because those people are almost never around when things go bad for the police. So always advocating for a cop trial and never standing there at a cop funeral is just, after 33 years, honestly, my patience for some of that is just not great. As a society, we should be rallying around people that are putting their life on the line for us. And it isn't every day, and it isn't every call, but this is the type of moment that you never know. And that's the rub for police, is you never know what call it's going to be. This is just a trespassing call. I'm sure he did not think anything significant was going to occur. And the next thing you know, he's stabbed and leaves a wife and two kids behind. And I just don't see the outrage that you'll see when the police screw something up, and all the calls for reform and the calls for never again. And a police officer gets stabbed to death on a routine call, and it's, we'll watch the funeral and we'll feel bad, and then it'll kind of pass. And then the groups that are the critics, the next time we get into something, they'll be out in force. But they're not saying anything right now, I guarantee you that. And I just, I find that troubling.
Right. I hear you, Chief, and it is a concern. And I don't know how you train for something like that either, personally. I'm not in the industry, not in the profession, but again, without making all of your officers paranoid about what could happen on any given call, I don't know how you train for something like that really either, because they go to the call, they respond, they are in public service, and they protect and serve, and any call can turn deadly. We've seen it, unfortunately, too many times, from a traffic stop to a domestic to a trespassing call, something like this. And I don't know how you train for that.
Yeah, you know, honestly, formerly, you're right. The way we trained for it was we made officers paranoid about it and created greater distance. Certainly when I was brought up in the 90s, a significant amount of the training was you getting out of these things safe. And there was less emphasis on public interaction and rapport with citizens and slowing things down. It was more focused on officers surviving. Of course, we had officers attacked and killed even with that mentality. I love a lot of the advances that we've made in policing, and I don't know that there's really enough credit given to that, because we're so different than the way I was trained in slowing things down, in de-escalating things, in talking with people. You're right. It can come at any time. And so what we try to train our officers is to have that rapport, to establish that dialogue. You have to like people. But on the other hand, to be prepared that you're not sure what's going to happen or when. And, you know, sometimes it's just like this. It's just the officer is being attacked. But other times it's the officer who's attacked. And if he's put down, or she's put down, then we're off to attack others, like you could see at school resource officers or on domestic violence calls. You know, so the price of the officer being attacked and losing can be high for someone else as well. So somewhere in there, you try and strike that balance between we actually are just people doing the job and friendly, and we want to help folks, to also, but you're never really sure who's going to turn on you. And in this case, you know, the officer paid with his life.
Right. Right, that's true. I want to ask you about another issue. This was a case involving three of your officers from early last year. And a report came out just a couple weeks ago, I believe, from the Attorney General's office, clearing your officers in connection with the Dotson case. This was a unfortunate fatal shooting of a gentleman at his home. Incorrect address, officers responded. And I just want to get your thoughts on that report, I guess, that came out not too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, I've yet to, and early next month it'll be 10 years that I've been chief here, and I've yet to have a shooting that I thought was without tragedy, without somebody being injured by losing a family member or a friend. They're all tragic. I can tell you, I never like that the police get into shootings, and I wish that we didn't. The incident on April 5th of last year, of course, was controversial, as we all know. The officers did respond to the wrong address, but I thought that the AG's report, which focused on a report provided to them by a professor out of South Carolina, who is kind of a police use of force expert, testifies apparently both for and against the police, in different matters. In this case, he walked through really kind of what I did as well as chief, and that's, you know, although that was a mistake, that was not the domino that made the end result inevitable. And because of that, he did not believe that the officers should be charged, and the Attorney General's office apparently agrees with them. I guess it's the Department of Justice
now. No, right, that's right.
Department of Justice. So that was a major case for those three officers and their families. We delivered the news to them. I had a chance to talk with all of them later on that day when the news broke. Of course, they were all relieved. There was a lot of stress on their families as to what would happen. They didn't really know. They are back on the street in one form or another right now, all three of them, and doing a good job. But they know, and I know, and all of our employees know, you know, it's a tragedy for the Dotson family. This ends that portion of it, the criminal investigation, but still the family has to live with the results of it. And for that, I am deeply sorry.
Thank you. And have you reached out to the family in light of this, or after this report has come out, or how does that work, or how do you, as chief, take on that type of conversation, if at all?
You know, it's a tougher one, honestly. In the past, we've used the district attorney's office when we were going to release footage, for mm-hmm. instance. The family will be called in if they want to come in and meet with the DAs and see what we're going to release. They have the opportunity to do that. That's just something I believe, you know, no family should be watching it for the first time on the news. You have a chance to sit with the district attorney and kind of talk through it. There was that opportunity in this case. I was out of town, as you know, at the time of the shooting. There was some back and forth about whether we should be reaching out. But once attorneys got involved, it all gets dicier. So they're in the middle of a lawsuit. I've expressed repeatedly through the months, you know, my sorrow at how this all went. It certainly was not what I was wanting to see, but I have not had a direct communication with the Dotson family.
Gotcha. And you're right, I guess, when lawyers get involved, and the city lawyers get involved, or others yes. get involved, there's a lot, I guess, that comes down of what you can say and cannot say because of what may happen in court down the road.
Yes. And, you know, the things that I'm saying right now and that I have said all along are just basically how I feel as a person. You know, I have, you know, deep sympathy for the family and friends. That's the case in every one of the shootings that we've had. I know there's people hurting. My brother, through the years, my brother spent a lot of time in jail. I know how my parents felt about that. I know, of course, he was convicted and he was the bad guy, so to speak, in those instances. But I know how my family felt as they went through it, and so I do have a lot of empathy for people. Even if at the moment, and some of our shootings like Bo Wilson, you know, even at the moment that the police intervene and wind up using deadly force, the suspect may have been engaged in something dangerous, or in Bo's case, obviously, a homicide. But there's still family and friends behind the scenes that are still mourning that loss, and so, you know, it's never a good situation. It is a reality. It's a reality that we can control the best that we can. We have strict use of force policies at FPD. We have a use of force review team that looks at every use of force that our officers get involved in to try and either learn from it or correct action if the officers were wrong in what they did. So these are always emotional cases.
Understood. That's true. And again, this investigation, it kind of started with, I think, state police.
It did.
Who did the investigation initially, and then all that went on to the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, and had this other expert come in. And that's kind of trying to keep it as independent as possible, I
yes.
suppose, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I want to ask you, too, a little bit about the number of homicides in the community over the last year or so. It seems like there's been more than usual amount, and if there's anything going on there that the public should be aware of, or if these are, I know they're all mostly unrelated, at least, or all of them unrelated, but what's going on? You track that, I know.
We do. It has really been, since early December, a rough, now I guess, 2 months for us here in San Juan County, not even just in Farmington. The county's had a couple of them as well.
True.
That they're investigating. So really, I guess the theme has been they're mostly known to each other, the victim and the suspect. Oftentimes there's a domestic link to them. And I'm kind of generalizing. We have multiple different investigations obviously going on, so I don't want to get into the specifics of any one. And a couple of them we've already made arrests. And what I would tell you in some of the others that we're looking at, you're continuing to see that theme of a domestic relationship involved. So this isn't so much stranger on stranger, which is X problem for the police. But it certainly highlights, again, the dangers of domestic violence, our need as a police department to continue to develop our tactics for dealing with them, and as a criminal justice system, for us to continue to emphasize the danger that these pose and the red flags that you see when you look at some of the history of some of these suspects. You know, a one-time thing, okay, but when it's repeated calls for service and repeated charges, and then the victim withdraws the charges at a certain point, and then it ends in these tragedies. You really get to see the red flags that were there along the way. And so we're working ourselves as a department right now to try and figure out how we can do a better job. And we've got some partners. You know, we're working with the court system on kind of a pilot project to do risk assessments on violators, to have our officers do that out in the field at the time of arrest, so we can provide more information to the court system. But there's no doubt about it, domestic violence is a significant threat in our community.
Right, and I guess it brings up the topic too. You mentioned the red flag laws earlier, with the legislature looking at maybe amending the current law that's on the books. And again, I have to ask you, I think there's only so much that the police can do with a report if the accuser takes back the charges or recants the allegations, I suppose. I mean, you're not supposed to go in and remove someone without any kind of criminal intent.
No. You know, we're working with the district attorney's office as well. You know, back in the 90s when I was copping, you didn't have all the evidence that you have today. We'd go to domestic violence cases when the victim withdrew the charges later on or recanted the story later on. That was really the end of it. There wasn't a lot. We'd tape record, if you remember tape recorders, we would tape record a statement from the victim. We'd have photos and things like that. But right now, every one of our officers walking into these scenes has body cameras. So we're showing you the injuries. We're showing you the demeanor of the victim. We're showing you the demeanor of the suspect. We're showing you the scene and the tension and the chaos that sometimes has resulted from the argument. So later on, if the story changes, really we're trying to work with the district attorney's office to use the evidence that we gathered at the scene to continue on with the charges, regardless of that fact. And that's important, I think. It's important in that victims aren't intimidated into having to withdraw charges later on because they're afraid something else is going to happen. In this case, it won't be your decision. It would be the police and the prosecutor's office still going forward with the evidence that we had at the scene. You can't do that in every case, but certainly we're exploring ways we can be more effective.
Right. Understood. And that kind of takes that other part out of it, I guess, too, in some cases,
yes,
when you have that evidence to back up the original allegation, I suppose.
Yes.
Right. Just a couple of minutes remaining this morning, Chief. And before we go, I want to ask you about there's a event yesterday, a sporting event. We both watched, I think, through clenched teeth, maybe. I don't know. But it was Super Bowl and another win by the Chiefs.
It was. The Chiefs, I don't know if they're yet to the New England Patriots, but they're kind of a dynasty in the making. You got to give it to Andy Reid. Was successful in Philadelphia before and then moves over. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Pacheco, they all had big games.
Well, you left out the main person behind their win was Taylor Swift. Come on.
Well, Taylor.
Let's be honest, yeah, Chief.
It's hard to leave her out.
Right.
We saw her on TV enough.
Yes, we did.
In the course of it. But, you know, I thought the 49ers had just a great season. Of course, my Packers lost to the 49ers and we led most of that game and then collapsed in the fourth quarter and the back stormed Frisco. And so I know they're feeling the same pain that we had. But it's tough when you watch those because those guys have spent so much time trying to get to that, the pinnacle of their profession, and then to fall short, you know, is painful. But it was a great game, I thought. You don't see many go into overtime.
I think the second one only in history, right,
yeah,
that went into overtime. So, yeah, and it was one of those last minute, could go either way. You know, exciting to kind of see that. I think the overtime rules came out of that Buffalo Bills loss in overtime in a playoff game maybe 2 years ago or so, if I remember correctly.
That's right. And, you know, I was actually pleased to see this, Buffalo has lost some by a mistake or an error, you know.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Right, and then they live with that for the rest. It was good to see. It was just good playing. Nobody made a big mistake. There was
no wide right.
The kicker for the 49ers hit his field goal. The Chiefs were just able to storm down the field and score a touchdown. So, you know, there's no GOAT in this thing. It was just two teams that played a great game. So I was pleased for that.
Very true. That's very true. Chief Ebby, always great to catch up with you and have a little conversation. I appreciate your time this morning. I know you have to go off to get some x-rays.
Yes.
Again, good luck.
Thank you.
We hope all looks good.
I'll see you on the court, though, soon.
Okay. You won't see me, but I'll see you.
Okay. Reffing. That sounds good. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Farmington Police Chief Steve Ebby, my guest this morning right here on KSJE.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.